Super Forecasting, The Art and Science of Prediction. Authors, Philip E. Tetlock and Dan Gardner. The Good Judgment Project. By one rough estimate, the United States has 20,000 intelligence analysts assessing everything. This forecasting is critical to national security, yet little can be said with any confidence about how good it is. To change that, IARPA, the Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Activity, created a forecasting tournament in which five scientific teams led by top researchers in the field would compete to generate accurate forecasts on the sorts of tough questions intelligence analysts deal with every day. The Good Judgment Project, launched by Philip E. Tetlock and his research and life partner, Barbara Mellers, was one of those five teams. Each team would effectively be its own research project and is free to improvise whatever methods it thought would work. But it is required to submit forecasts at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time every day from September 2011 to June 2015. Over 4 years, IARPA posed nearly 500 questions about world affairs, with the vast majority of forecasts extending out more than 1 month and less than 1 year. In all, we gathered over 1 million individual judgments about the future. In year one, GJP beat the official control group by 60%. In year two, we beat the control group by 78%. After 2 years, GJP was doing so much better than its academic competitors, in which IARPA dropped the other teams. We noted two key conclusions that emerged from this research. One, foresight is real. Some people have it in spades. They aren't gurus or oracles with the power to peer decades into the future, but they do have real, measurable skill at judging how high-stake events are likely to unfold 3 months, 6 months, a year, or a year and a half in advance. Second, what makes these super forecasters so good is what they do. Foresight isn't a mysterious gift bestowed at birth. It is the product of particular ways of thinking, gathering information, and updating beliefs. These habits of thought can be learned and cultivated by an intelligent, thoughtful, determined person. It may not even be all that hard to get started. Illusions of knowledge. In describing how we think and decide, modern psychologists often deploy a dual system model that partitions our mental universe into two domains. System 2 is the familiar realm of conscious thought. It consists of everything we choose to focus on. By contrast, System 1 is largely a stranger to us. It is the realm of automatic perceptual and cognitive operations. The numbering of the two systems is not arbitrary. System 1 comes first. It is fast and constantly running in the background. If a question is asked and you instantly know the answer, it sprang from System 1. System 2 is charged with interrogating that answer. Does it stand up to scrutiny? Is it backed by evidence? This process takes time and effort, which is why the standard routine in decision-making is as follows. First, System 1 delivers an answer, and only then can System 2 get involved, starting with an examination of what System 1 decided. Inside out and anchoring. Super forecasters start with the base rate, how common something is within a broader class, what Daniel Kahneman calls the outside view, which is in contrast to the inside view, or the specifics of the particular case. The outside view is typically abstract, bare, and does not lend itself so readily to storytelling, so even smart, accomplished people routinely fail to consider it. Super forecasters don't make that mistake. When we make estimates, we tend to start with some number and adjust. The number we start with is called the anchor. It is important because we typically under-adjust, which means a bad anchor can easily produce a bad estimate. And it's astonishingly easy to settle on a bad anchor. So, a forecaster who starts by diving into the inside view risks being swayed by a number that may have little or no meaning. But if he starts with the outside view, his analysis will begin with an anchor that is meaningful. And a better anchor is a distinct advantage. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. So you have an outside view and an inside view. Now they have to be merged, just as your brain merges the different perspective of your two eyeballs into a single vision. Coming up with an outside view, an inside view, and a synthesis of the two isn't the end. It's a good beginning. Super forecasters constantly look for other views they can synthesize into their own. There are many ways to obtain new perspectives. What do other forecasters think? What outside and inside views have they come up with? What are experts saying? You can even train yourself to generate different perspectives. Uncertain supers. Super forecasters tend to be probabilistic thinkers. An awareness of irreducible uncertainty is the core of probabilistic thinking. But it's a tricky thing to measure. To do that, we took advantage of a distinction that philosophers have proposed between epistemic and aleatory uncertainty. Epistemic uncertainty is something you don't know but is, at least in theory, knowable. Aleatory uncertainty is something you don't only not know, but it is unknowable too. Aleatory uncertainties ensure life will always have surprises, regardless of how carefully we plan. Superforecasters grasp this deep truth better than most. When they sense that a question is loaded with irreducible uncertainty, say, a currency market question, they have learned to be cautious, keeping their initial estimates inside the shades of the maybe zone between 35% and 65%, and moving out tentatively. The power of small. There are two dangers a forecaster faces after making the initial call. One is not giving enough weight to new information. That's underreaction. The other danger is overreacting to new information, seeing it as more meaningful than it is, and adjusting a forecast too radically. Both underreaction and overreaction can diminish accuracy, but can also, in extreme cases, destroy a perfectly good forecast. A forecaster who doesn't adjust his views in light of new information won't capture the value of that information. While a forecaster who is so impressed by the new information that he bases his forecast entirely on it will lose the value of the old information that underpinned his prior forecast. But the forecaster who carefully balances old and new information captures the value in both, and it puts into his new forecast. The best way to do that is by updating often, but bit by bit. Know when you have failed. Unfortunately, most forecasters don't get the high-quality feedback that helps meteorologists improve due to ambiguous language, vague terms like probably and likely, and time lag. When forecasts span months or years, the wait for a result allows the flaws of memory to creep in. Forecasters who use ambiguous language and rely on flawed memories to retrieve old forecasts don't get clear feedback, which makes it impossible to learn from experience. To get better at a certain type of forecasting, that is the type of forecasting you must do, over and over again, with good feedback, telling you how your training is going. Perpetual beta. Computer programmers have a wonderful term for a program that is not intended to be released in a final version, but will be instead used, analyzed, and improved without end. It is perpetual beta. We can now sketch a rough composite portrait of the model superforecaster. In philosophic outlook, they tend to be cautious, humble, and non-deterministic. In their abilities and thinking styles, they tend to be actively open-minded, intelligent, and knowledgeable, reflective, and numerate. In their methods of forecasting, they tend to be pragmatic, analytical, probabilistic, thoughtful updaters, and good, intuitive psychologists. In their work ethic, they tend to have a growth mindset and grit. To paraphrase Thomas Edison, super forecasting appears to be roughly 75% perspiration and 25% inspiration. And not every super forecaster has every attribute. There are many paths to success, and many ways to compensate for a deficit in one area with strength in another. The predictive power of perpetual beta does suggest, though, that no matter how high one's IQ, it is difficult to compensate for lack of dedication to the personal project of growing one's synapses.